When I try to sing, you say I'm off key. Why can't you see how much this hurts me? With your perfect beauty and your perfect pitch, you're a perfect terror. When I come around, must you always put me down? If you say my singing is off key, my love, you will hurt my feelings, don't you see, my love? I wish I had an ear like yours, a voice that would behave. All I have is feeling and the voice God gave. You insist my music goes against the rules. Yes, but rules were never made for lovesick fools. I wrote this little song for you, but you don't care. It's a crooked song, but all my love is there. The thing that you would see if you would do your part is even if I'm out of tune, I have a gentle heart. I took your picture with my trusty Rolex flex, and now all I have developed is a complex. Possibly in vain, I hope you weaken, oh my love, and forget those rigid rules that undermine my dream of a life of love and music with someone who understands that even though I may be out of tune, when I attempt to say how much I love you, all that matters is the message that I bring, which is my dear one, I love you. Que você não sabe nem sequer presente é que os desafinados também têm um coração. Fotografei você na minha Rolleiflex, revelou-se a sua enorme ingratidão. Só não poderá falar assim do meu amor, que ele é o maior que você pode encontrar, viu? Você com a sua música esqueceu o principal. É que no peito dos desafinados, no fundo do peito bate calado, que no peito dos desafinados também bate um coração. Parabapapaparapapapapaia para.
Hello, I'm Bill DeYoung. This is Arts Alive, the podcast of the St. Pete Catalyst. You have been listening to the warm, fuzzy, talented, and delightful Nate Najjar and Daniela Soledad, who are here with me today. Hello, you guys.
Hi, Bill.
Hey,
thank
Bill.
You so much
Did
for
I just
having
call you
us.
Warm and fuzzy? I don't know. Maybe we should do that again. Anyway, that was just... Well, tell me about the song you just played. What was that?
It was Desafinado, off-key.
Did you write that?
No, I wish I did.
It's nice.
Jobim did.
It's sort of the main bossa nova song that launched bossa nova in North America.
Oh, I thought that was Edie Gourmet and Blame It on the Bossa Nova.
Well, that was a couple of years after this all started. Yeah, that was when it got down to them. It was that's when it was, you know, super. That's when it was everywhere.
Streamlined and homogenized and sent out to the masses.
Exactly. Everything was. They had bossa nova bubblegum at one point.
But, really?
Yeah, but that tune, Desafinado, that was Antonio Carlos Jobim.
Oh, yeah.
And Charlie Bird and Stan Getz recorded that in 1962 on a record called Jazz Samba, and Stan Getz got a Grammy for his solo on that song, and the record got a Grammy for the whole record.
Cool.
And that's what started the bossa nova in
North
America.
I'm going to say like 62, somewhere in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you haven't noticed, folks, if you don't know who these people are, they are musicians and they reside here in St. Petersburg, and we're lucky to have them. And they specialize in bossa nova and samba music, and Nate is the guitar player. Danny is the singer. I wanted to start by... Before I do that, let me plug tonight's gig at 7C Music, which is, of course, at 535 22nd Street South. It's a guitar store. It's a fabulous guitar store with a really nice stage and a great sound system. You guys are playing at 6:30 tonight.
That's right, 6:30 tonight.
And this show's called Love and Bossa Nova. We'll get to that. What I wanted to do was talk about your origins as the kind of couple that you are, musical dynamos, and as people, because I knew Nate maybe slightly before I think you arrived here. Nate, where are you from originally?
St. Petersburg, Florida.
So you never left?
I was born at St. Anthony's.
Wow.
I went to St. Pete High. Spent my whole life on Fifth Avenue.
I was going to say, I see a Kawa Coffee all the time.
Yeah.
Playing in the Palladium.
Yeah.
How'd you get interested in this kind of music?
I had a band teacher named Everett Harris who lived down in Pinellas Point. He's left town since. He was, he played jazz piano, kind of more than he taught. I mean, you know, he taught. You know, I was in middle school, and he always said, "You guys better behave because I make more money playing gigs than I do teaching you guys.
Yeah.
You don't want who they're gonna put in here if I leave." So I used to cut class and hang out in the band room, and he'd be playing.
That's fear of God stuff, is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Mr. Harris was good stuff, man.
Yeah.
I miss him. I wish I could find him.
So he inspired you in some ways.
Yeah, he used to play the piano. I would cut class and hang out in the band room, and he'd be in there just playing the piano. And I remember he was playing Misty, Errol Garner. Look at me, I'm as helpless as... And I went and I looked, and he's got a lead sheet on the piano. And I said to him, I said, "Now, so a lead sheet, it's literally just the melody. It's the part that the voice sings. It's just the melody. It's a single note, and then there's a chord written above it, and the chord is written like in letters. It's not spelled out in notes. So it's just like, for instance, E flat, and then there's a D note, and that's it. And yet he's playing all this stuff. And I remember saying to him, "How do you, I'm 12 years old. He said, "How do you know how to play all that when that's what you're looking at?" And he sort of explained kind of how a jazz musician makes it up based on these parameters of what the fundamentals of music are, in the same way that we have a conversation speaking.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was the most fascinating thing. Then a few years later, I had a teacher at St. Pete. I had a math teacher who gave me a Wes Montgomery tape because he knew I played the guitar.
Yeah.
And he said, it was Smoking at the Half Note, which is one of the most iconic, one of the most iconic jazz records.
Yeah.
And one of the most iconic jazz guitar records there ever was. Pat Metheny, when he was a kid, he transcribed every note on this record. And he went to Berkeley, and he played some of it for his audition, and they hired him to be the next guitar teacher. So I had a math teacher at St. Pete High who gave me this Wes Montgomery tape, and he gave me a Django Reinhardt tape. You know, these were dubs. And I listened to it, and it was just the most exciting thing I ever heard. I said, "I want to do that."
What were you sort of a rock and roll?
Yeah,
Keith
I like
Richards
Jimi Hendrix.
Kind of guy.
I like Jimmy Page. I like The Who. You know, I did for my senior year talent show at St. Pete High. I had my little power trio, my little rock trio.
You know,
we opened with the overture from Tommy. And I worked out the whole thing, you know, to play it on the guitar.
Wow.
You know, so that was, you know, that was what I was, you know, but then I got into jazz and I started working and I met John Lamb and Buster. I played with Buster for 4 years, you know, Buster Cooper down at the Garden.
Sure.
And that was, you know, St. Pete has always been a really good training ground for jazz musicians. There's a great scene today. And the younger guys coming up, you know, I mean, I was the young kid, and all of a sudden I'm not anymore. And I'm seeing the young kids coming up playing with me and, you know, our buddies and Suggs and all them and the Luchas. And the young kids are really happening. And, you know, so we're lucky. We've got a cool scene here that's sort of sustaining itself.
That's what I mean. It's going to keep, and that's what they talk about in theater. I do a lot of work with theater people, and that's always what they're saying. It's really great when, you know, young people come in, and the same oldsters like you and me who've been around for 100 years, you know. And so at some point, though, I think when we met, like playing this kind of Brazilian music was not all you did.
It was a large component of what I did.
Yeah.
I'm a unique case because even though I like jazz guitar, you know, I came to it from other places.
Yeah.
That you know, I'm not a horn player who grew up playing band music and then going to playing in jazz band in high school. And I'm not that. I'm a guitar player. You know what guitar players are like. We like the guitar, mm-hmm. and we like all the stuff that the accoutrements that go with the guitar and the sounds and the exploration So you know, Daniela's dad, he's an amazing producer and instrumentalist down in Rio. And he always refers to me as, he says, Nate, you're like me. You're an astronaut. You know, you get interested in this one and this one and this one. And then it all becomes an amalgamation of what you do, right? So I've been playing Brazilian music since I was about 18, 19 years old. It's amazing how much I didn't know, considering how deep I had gotten into it. You know, hooking up with the Brazilians, as it were, and sort of becoming immersed in the place revealed a massive depth that, you know, if you sit back and think about it, of course that depth exists. But I was really deep into it already, you know, for a gringo, and felt a certain amount of depth sort of compared to my surroundings.
It called to you.
Yeah.
In other words, So
it's pretty hip. But anyway, but I'd always played it for a very long time. And the reason I didn't play more simply is because I'm not Brazilian and I played jazz and I did these other things. And so my music on my own was this amalgamation of all these things that I played a lot of classical music with my trio. I did all kinds of things.
Yeah.
But, you know, Daniela she's the most authentic thing we could possibly imagine. She's a girl from Rio who grew up in this musical environment. She's not you're already hip if you got a girl from Rio who, you know, knows the songs of her people, right? But this girl here, this lady here, is a girl from Rio who grew up in the musical environment. Antonio Carlos Jobim was the witness on the birth of her aunt, you know, on the certificate, because he was out drinking with her granddad that, you know, the night that the kid was born.
In true Brazilian fashion.
You
That's
know,
great,
I
man.
Mean, it's yeah, just like, yeah. And so she grew up in recording studios. She grew up. And so I got so lucky that the Brazilian that I met is this. I mean, she's so authentic. She sings the hell out of American jazz, by the way. She do some vocalese, make Kurt Elling blush.
That doesn't surprise me at all. I'd like to talk with you about, you know, obviously your backgrounds. Obviously you're Brazilian, and your grandfather and your father were composers, and your father, I suppose, still is.
Yes.
And okay. But so you had a musical family. But talk to me a little bit about how you absorbed this music, and when you came to the States, you know, how you brought it with you.
Yeah. So I grew up in this very musical environment.
Yeah.
You know, my dad always had a studio set up in the house, and of course worked in multiple different studios around Rio. So when I was a kid, I went to the studios with him a lot. And he was producing for our main TV channel at the time for many years. And so a lot of the TV shows that required kids' voices, I'd sing on that.
Ah.
So I was singing in studios and I'd be around. And that was really, when you grow up in this environment, you don't think it's anything different, right? You think this is the norm. So to me, that was the norm. And
well, again, and I've asked you, I mean, as a teenager or a very young person coming up in that environment, I mean, I know I've asked you this before. Were you listening to pop music too? You know, it was like, oh, I love the old stuff. I love Jobim. I love this stuff.
You know, it's so funny because I actually, when it comes to music, I actually have a pretty eclectic background of what I used to listen to when I was like a preteen or teenager. So I grew up with mainly Brazilian music, a lot of different genres. My grandfather, not the composer one, because it's so funny, because my dad's family gets all the credit because they did it professionally. They got well known, right? All that. But my mom's family, even though a lot of them were not professional musicians, they all were very much into music and played instruments. So my grandfather listened to a lot of older Brazilian music, like in the house. And I lived with my grandparents for a while, for a few years with my mom. So I would listen to all that music. It was beautiful. It was, my grandmother used to love singing. So
we'll cut that part out. Hey, Nate, can you peer on the microphone just for a second? I'm cutting this part out. Okay, that's good. Sorry.
No
worries. I'm sorry.
Continue. No worries. No worries.
You're talking about your grandparents.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, so wait, what was the question?
Oh, you were talking about that on your, I guess, your mother's side of the family.
Yeah, that's also very musical.
Yeah.
But so anyway, so yeah, I grew up listening to a lot of Brazilian music, but my parents also liked American music. So I also listened to music that they would put in the house, which was like Stevie Wonder, Sade, Tony Braxton. I just remember my mom's out, Boys to Men, know?
I can timestamp this. Yeah. I know what era we're talking about. Okay.
So it's always been, so that was parallel to the Brazilian music in my teens.
Well, that helps formulate who you are musically, right?
Yeah.
It's like Nate was saying, from the different influences that he had.
Yeah. And that's the funny thing about Nate and I, because we, even though we came from, you know, different countries, completely different upbringings, really.
Yeah.
But musically, somehow, what we were exposed to and the things that we liked are the same, because Nate also played R&B for decades. And, you know, so that all, and I love R&B, so that we just kind of have the same tastes. And so we have a similar, how do you say, soup?
Yeah, okay.
Of musical.
It's a gumbo.
Yeah, gumbo.
It's
there you go.
Tasty gumbo. So at some point you came here. Were you producing her? It's like, oh, here's this girl singer. She's pretty neat.
She hired me for a gig.
Ah.
She, it was amazing. You know Phil Fast? You must know Phil Fast.
I don't
think
so.
Great guitar player. He,
is he fast? Sorry.
Phil's dad was a legendary Brazilian jazz piano player named Manfredo Fest.
Fest. I know that name. Sure, I do.
Yeah, and Phil lived here for many years because Manfredo lived here about 20 years ago. Phil moved to he's in West Palm Beach now.
Manfredo Fest. Yeah, of course I know that name. Yeah,
and so Phil's a great guitar player. He played with Ronnie D for years. They had a band, we've played at the Palladium together a handful of times. So she had hired him for a gig because she knew him, because they're Brazilians, and the Brazilian community, particularly the musicians, it's fairly close.
Sure.
And he didn't want to come up to rehearse. And so he says, call my friend Nate Najjar. He can do it. And she says, wait, is he Brazilian? Okay, I need to meet this guy. So she called me for a gig, and I called him and said, I've never heard of this person. Can she sing? Do I want to take this gig?
You're checking each other out.
Yeah. And she's thinking, I got to meet this guy and make sure he can play Brazilian music, or if he's done. It was, so she hired me for a gig. And, but when we met, we had a really delightful conversation about repertoire.
Yeah.
And programming. And I was absolutely taken aback. I couldn't believe that, every song we talked about, because I know a lot of Brazilians who know a lot of repertoire, just colloquially, right?
Sure.
You know, and the depth of the repertoire that she knew off the cuff, and she knew all the words, and when, you know, we'd be talking about a tune, and you know, I don't know, Estrada do Sol. Oh, I love that song. And she would sing it, and it was pitch perfect. You know, we're sitting at Panera in a booth, right? Mm. And she's leaning, and just in this quiet, it's articulate. It's not like, oh, yeah, that sounds like the tune. It's articulately perfect.
So a little and bell goes off in your head. Hey.
Every lyric. I mean, we go through 50 tunes just in a conversation because this is what music nerds do, you know? And it's just every.
So yes, we do, by the way.
Yeah. So I said to her, you know, I got a concert coming up in a few weeks at the Palladium. I need somebody to sing two songs. Would you do it? And she said, yeah. So she agreed to do my Christmas concert. And so, okay, well, let's rehearse a little bit. So we got together and we rehearsed a bit. Whatnot. And after rehearsing about twice, I thought, you know what? I mean, you were there when Stacey Kent and her husband Jim played with me at the Palladium, mm-hmm. right? I remember you were there.
Yep.
And
it seems like a week ago, to tell you the truth, but I know it wasn't.
It seems like a lifetime ago for me.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Your experience is a little different than mine.
Yeah, it's wild. But, you know, I had off and on sort of as a guest, or was like, you know, I played with Stacey a number of places around the world in different situations. And she sings Brazilian music. She sings jazz. She sings song really exquisitely.
Oh, she's great. She's great.
Back to Daniela, 5 years later, 6 years later, 4 years later, whatever it is, I started rehearsing with her and I started seeing this potential. And so my first thought is, hey, this could be my new band, you know? And all I have to do is exactly what I do, but I put this amazing lady out front and it'd be extra special, right? And so I said, I want to produce a record for you. I said, you don't have to pay me. I'll own it. I have a label. I'm experienced putting out records, and you know, we'll do it. And this is what's possible. And she said, sure. I'm like, okay, great. And I remember, it's funny because I remember having conversations with Ron, our old manager, Ron Moss, who died earlier this year. We really miss Ron. Ron, we miss you, man. And Ron was saying, Nate, it should be your, because at that point I was recording for Candid. It's a legendary label. Mm-hmm. They were based in the UK for a long time, but Concord just bought them. Actually, Ron brokered the deal. So Candid's back over here now. But I was recording for Candid at the time. Mm-hmm. And Ron was thinking, well, Nate, it should be your record and feature her. And I said, No. This is going to be her record, totally her record in every way. Yeah, I'll be the band and whatnot. And so we did this thing, so Daniela being the, you know, we're both Virgos, our birthday's 5 days apart, and Daniela being the type of Virgo that she is, she wanted to rehearse every day. And so she showed up in my studio, 10 o'clock in the morning every day, and wanted to rehearse, and she'd come in. I remember the first time she picked up a guitar and played it for me.
Oh, this is funny, actually. Let me say something about that. Because when I met Nate, I hadn't heard him play. I had no idea what he sounded like. I had no idea what he played.
He was just a smooth
talker. I hadn't listened. I hadn't seen. So when I met him, it was before I knew any of it. So he says, oh, play me something on the guitar. And I am so glad I did not know what he sounded like, because there is no way I would have picked up the guitar in front of him.
You're just being sweet. She is an amazing guitar player.
This was how many years ago now we're talking? About six?
Yeah, about six.
Yeah, about 6 years ago, six years ago.
Because I remember that you gave me the idea for doing the COVID era video interviews I did, because you would do those broadcasts from your apartment way up high over downtown St. Petersburg. Yeah. Those live shows, what was it, Friday nights? Or
Yeah, Fridays at 7:30.
58 weeks of that.
And that seems like a few years. Yeah. How many weeks?
58.
There you go. How has it changed over the years? I mean, you've gotten more comfortable musically with each other. You've been around the world. You've been around the country. You've made quite a few records together now at this point. But is it almost like telepathy now? You know what he's thinking. He knows what you're thinking.
Yes.
Let's do that.
Telepathy. Yes, it's definitely telepathy.
Yeah.
It's pretty special. You know, when we play together, you know, in terms of rhythm and the phrasing and the time when we're playing music, we always land together. And that's a thing that was always very frustrating with me with a lot of musicians that I would play with, is, you know, we all relate to time differently and we all feel time differently. There are certain musicians that I've consistently, that we land together, and it's such a satisfactory sensation to do. It's like walking comfortably.
Yeah.
It's like getting somewhere in a really good mood and everything's perfect, you know? And Daniela and I, we always land together. And what's really funny is harmonically and melodically, we've gotten used to predicting each other because we know each other's tendencies, you know? So it's really special, you know, and we live this life, you know, our show is called Love and Bossa Nova. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll go back to the commercial tonight at 7C at 6:30. We're playing Love and Bossa Nova.
Mm-hmm. 535 22nd Street North, right there at the Warehouse Arts District Arts Exchange campus. The store's next to that.
And I don't mean to interrupt, but we are playing the same exact show we just played in Paris.
Sold
and
out.
In England last month.
Is it a full band or is it just not just
no,
two of you?
Love and Bossa Nova is the two of us.
Okay. And you just did Paris and London.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. See, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we were there a couple of weeks ago.
You played the Isle of Wight. Yeah. Globetrotters.
Yeah.
How do they like this sort of music over there? Do they think it's...
They loved it.
You know, nobody in the neighborhood, I guess, plays
this. They loved
this,
it. We had four houses and everybody loved it. And
wow.
So we feel so lucky.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a beautiful
Paris
thing.
Has been... England, the UK has always been really, really good to us. We were hoping to do Ronnie Scott's this year, mm-hmm. and their renovations messed up the scheduling. And so we couldn't make it this year, but we'll be back next autumn.
He's long gone, right? But I mean, the club is still there.
Yeah, the club is there.
Yeah,
it's legendary.
Cool.
But Paris has been particularly good to us. And I've been playing in Paris for about a decade, and Daniela's been playing there now a few years. And we find enthusiastic people. There was a group of people who flew from Corsica to see you. When we were in Paris last month.
Wow.
And some people came from Spain and exactly. You know, so it's pretty hip. But the duo show is Love and Bossa Nova.
Yeah.
And it's very intimate and quiet and it's us in our living room.
Before we go, I do want to talk about Deco Tropical because I know that you've now recorded it. Is it a live record from the shows?
No, although there is a live record from the show that will be happening. It's there, and it'll be coming out, but this has to come out and be done properly.
Well, how is this different from what you do as Love and Bossa Nova, for example? Describe this to me.
There are a few layers. First, this album is a full band album, mm-hmm. and Love and Bossa Nova is always just the two of us. So everything Love and Bossa Nova is just a duet.
Yeah,
and generally Bossa Nova.
And Bossa Nova. Like very traditional repertoire.
Really, it's like going to see João Gilberto, except it's you.
Yeah, it's very traditional repertoire, very intimate. So that's like a real bossa nova experience.
That's tonight. But this record you have coming out in the spring is what I just want to talk about. Nate asked me to mention it, and I think it's so cool. I want to mention it anyway. Yeah. But I remember you saying it was almost, I don't think you said rhythm and blues, but it's very soulful.
So
yes.
Deco Tropical is a Samba Soul Journey to Paradise.
That's what you called it.
That was it.
Right.
It's a Samba Soul Journey. It's not soul music like you think of soul music today, but it's influenced by the old soul music that we grew up with and liked. And it's influenced by that in a combination with the Brazilian sounds to, you know, give it some flavor and give it some, you know, it's grown folks music. And it's a journey. It's not quite a concept album, but it's a concept album. It's a journey that starts at the beginning and it takes you. It's thematic. Sonically, it's thematic. Lyrically, it's thematic. Conceptually, you know, it's an album.
The great thing about music contemporaneously is that you can, the word they use is fusion, but I mean, you can essentially put anything together and make it work when you know what you're doing.
I like amalgam better, but.
What did I say? Fusion?
Yeah. Well, that's the one. That's the jargon. That's the one that's used.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Well,
I like amalgam.
But what I'm
better.
Saying is, like, well, why not?
It's who you are, and it's what you do. You know,
isn't that cool? That's what's cool about being an artist. This is what I want to do now.
Yeah, really.
You know? And especially when people respond to it, and you get that love back. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
Let's talk one last time before we go about tonight's performance. It's 6:30 at 7C Music. That's over there on 22nd Street South. It's right next to the 9/11 Memorial, and the Arts Exchange is right there. It's a very cool place. You guys are doing Love and Bossa Nova there tonight.
We really look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah, I tell you, it's such a great intimate listening room. You know, so it's just, you know, music at its very best is a transportive thing. That's what it does.
Yeah.
And it's a perfectly pure sound. It's so transportive. And that room, the room at 7C, is so well suited to something this pure. You know, we really have, we've really enjoyed the growth of presenting this, of how we present it. We've curated it in a way, and it continues to do so. But we're understanding sort of the power of what it does. And this location at 7C Music is an amazing place to present that. So it's really worthwhile. It's going to be special. It's always special when we do it.
One of the things that's so cool about that room is that all the guitars kind of resonate when there's music going on.
Yeah.
You know, and there's just that kind of hum in the room. And maybe it's just subconscious to me, but I feel it.
Well, that's what frequencies do. Yeah, you're surrounded by a bunch of resonating wood from the earth.
Yeah.
You know, it's brilliant. Good stuff.
Najar Daniela Soledad, thank you so much for coming in, giving us your time today.
Thank you so much for having us.
We're really grateful for the invitation, Bill.
And we'll see you tonight, okay?
Thanks.